भगवान् बुद्ध भावनः
परितुष्यति विश्वात्मा
तिष्ठतो निजशासने
तस्य
with him
Rajna,
the king. Mahabhaga,
O noble one.
Bhagavan,
Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Buddha Bhavanaha,
who is the original cause of the cosmic manifestation.
Parityusyati,
becomes satisfied.
Vishwa-atma,
super soul of the entire universe.
Tishtata,
being situated.
Nijashashane,
in his own governing situation.
Translation, Canto 4, Chapter 14, Text 19.
O Noble One, if the king sees that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original cause of the cosmic manifestation, and the Supersoul within everyone is worshipped, the Lord will be satisfied.
You can repeat,
O Noble One,
if the king sees
that the Supreme Personality of Godhead,
the original cause of the cosmic manifestation,
and the Supersoul within everyone
is worshipped,
the Lord will be satisfied.
Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada.
It is a fact that the government's duty is to see that the Supreme Personality of Godhead is satisfied by the activities of the people as well as by the activities of the government. There is no possibility of happiness if the government or citizenry have no idea of Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is the original cause of the cosmic manifestation, or if they have no knowledge of Bhuta Bhavana, who is Vishvatma, or the Supersoul, the soul of everyone's soul. The conclusion is that without engaging in devotional service, neither the citizens nor the government can be happy in any way. At the present moment, neither the king nor the governing body is interested in seeing that the people are engaged in the devotional service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Rather, they are more interested in advancing the machinery of sense gratification. Consequently, they are becoming more and more implicated in the complex machinery of the stringent laws of nature. People should be freed from the entanglement of the three modes of material nature, and the only process by which this is possible is to surrender under the Supreme Personality of Godhead. This is advised in Bhagavad Gita. Unfortunately, neither the government nor the people in general have any idea of this. They are simply interested in sense gratification and being happy in this life. The word nijashashane, in his own governmental duty, indicates that both the government and the citizens are responsible for the execution of vanashram dharma. Once the populace is situated in the vanashram dharma, there is every possibility of real life and prosperity, both in this world and the next.
O Noble One, if the king sees that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original cause of the cosmic manifestation, and the Supersoul within everyone is worshipped, the Lord will be satisfied.
Om Agyan Timidandasya Ginangina Shilakaya Chakshurun Militam Denatasmaya Sigadavena Maha Sri Chaitanya Manobishtam Shtapitam Yena Bhutale Shwayam Rupa Gadamayam Dadantishva Padantikam Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasari Gaur Bhakta Vindam
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Om Ham Hrim Shrum Om Param Tathra Tathakesha Gajalat Padaka Lochana Vedvadaka Naka Sparsity Vasingha Namostate. O my Lord of Transcendental Lion, I offer my obeisances to you along with Mother Lakshmi. Sometimes flying in the sky, sometimes moving on foot, your mane hairs blaze with golden brilliance. Is that okay? So, in this verse of Srimad Bhagavatam, the illustrious Brahmins who serve as a council for the king
are trying to instruct King Vena in the proper duty of a king. We have information from Bhagavad Gita also as to the situation of the kingly order in human society. Evam parampara praptam imam rajasayo vidu sakahayana mahata yoganashta parantapa. That this knowledge of Krishna consciousness, this transcendental science, was received by the via medium of the disciplic succession, and the saintly kings understood it in that way. So in days of yore, in the Vedic civilization, the king had a great responsibility. The king actually was meant to ensure the material and the spiritual prosperity of his populace. How did he do this? He did this by the performance of yajna. Actually, the king in Vedic culture was called Raja Rishi. Raja means king and Rishi means saint. So practically speaking, that person who was the topmost position in human society, the king, as they used to say in France, the king can do no wrong. That was a fact in Vedic age. Nowadays, the kings, they do all the wrongs. But in the Vedic age, the king could do no wrong. Because he was a devotee of the Lord. He was a Raja Rishi. He could have just as easily been sitting in the Himalayas performing tapasya or austerity or meditation. Or he could have been doing any other duties that a Vaishnava may take up. But because of his particular order, because of his nature, he was sitting on the throne leading the people, Raja Rishi, a saint sitting on the throne. So, because he had no selfish motivation, he was satisfied himself, being a devotee of the Lord. He had nothing to exploit from the people. Therefore, his only business was to ensure that the people, both materially and spiritually, made progress. What is real progress? Savai pumsham pada dharmo yato bhaktiradoksaji ahaitakiya patiyata yayatma shupasidati. The supreme occupation for all men is that by which they can attain to the loving, devotional service of the Lord. Such devotional service must be unmotivated and uninterrupted in order to completely satisfy the self. So being a true leader of the people, the king's duty was to ensure that his people became Krishna conscious. Leader means, what does leader mean? Lead. Lead means to go from point A to point B. So a real leader, according to the Vedic Shastra, is one who can lead you in Krishna consciousness. Well, that is the param gatim, that is the ultimate goal of life. So anyone who is a leader must ensure that his dependents make progress towards the param gatim, to the ultimate goal of life. Therefore, the Vedic literatures say that one should not become a king, one should not become a guru, one should not become a parent, one should not become a teacher, unless he can ensure that his dependents can become freed from the repetition of the cycle of birth and death. So that is our definition of leader. Leader doesn't mean the best exploiter amongst men. Just like Prahlad Maharaj addressed his father, "O best of the Asuras." Yes, he was best, but what was he best of? He was best of the Asuras. Now everybody wants to be the best, the number one. But it's important to understand, to be number one at what? To be the best of the Asuras? Is there anything wonderful in that? So those who take political posts in Kali Yuga, they're best of the Asuras. We should not be impressed or intimidated by those who hold top political positions. Not only political, but in any field in our modern society. Scientists, teachers, politicians, whatever their case may be. We should not be impressed, because we should know that they've got to the top because they're best of Asura. What is Asura? Asura means one whose goal in life is sense gratification. There's devas and asuras. Devas are always looking to the lotus feet of Lord Vishnu. Asuras are always looking, how can I enjoy this material world? And to enjoy this material, you have to exploit. So the best of the exploiters, that person who can step on the most toes, or better, who can step on the most heads, who can exploit other, who's powerful physically, with his riches, his opulence, his mind and intelligence, that most powerful, he makes it to the top. That person who can cheat the people the most. It is a society of cheaters and cheated, as we said one time. In Bengal, there's a proverb. If you go to the marketplace and you speak some nonsense, oh, everyone will applaud. If you speak the truth, they'll throw sticks and stones at you. So because the people in Kali Yuga are sudra, kalo sudra sambhavan, they don't want to hear about Krishna. They want to hear how you can enjoy and exploit this material world. And that person who promises them the most sense gratification, that person they will elect as their leader. So these leaders are big sense gratifiers themselves, and they're able to appease the people by sense gratification. But they're not leaders in the true sense of the term. Those persons who are like hogs, dogs, camels, and asses, they take great pleasure in glorifying persons of similar mentality. And Prabhupada told a story that one time in the barnyard, all the animals got together and they said, "We're sick and tired of serving this farmer and his wife. We want to elect our own leader." So they got together, they put all their heads together, the chickens and the ducks and the geese and the cows and the asses and the horses, whatever else is there on a farm. They all got together. They had a big meeting, a big political meeting. Very impressive. They became democratic in their own right. And what did they do? They elected a leader. And who did they elect? Mr. Ass. They thought Mr. Ass was best qualified to lead them. Why? Because Mr. Ass, he had the loudest voice. Hee-haw, hee-haw. Oh, yes, he's speaking so loudly. He's so convinced. So let us elect Mr. Ass. So it's not, they don't elect leaders in Kali Yuga based on inequalities. That person who can cheat the people, who can speak in such a way as to flatter the people very nicely, that person becomes the leader. And then ultimately, because you cannot satisfy anyone with sense gratification, either individually or collectively, you cannot satisfy anyone by sense gratification. Just like the verse, Matir Nikrishne Pratasvatova, Mitobi Padyeta Grihavaratanam, Adanta Gobir Vishatam Tamisram Puna Punas Charvita Charvanam. Because of their uncontrolled senses, persons too addicted to materialistic life gradually glide towards hellish condition, chewing that which has already been chewed, and neither their efforts nor the efforts of others, or the combined of the two, can help them become Krishna conscious. So because these modern leaders promise what the sudras want, they elect him without any due consideration of what is his real quality. Practically speaking, as Bhagavatam describes in the 12th canto, justice can be had by money in Kali Yuga. There's no real justice. Money talks. Money's the honey. So if you have a lot of money, then you can be successful in Kali Yuga because you can get sense gratification. So who are the politicians who get their posts? Those politicians who have the most money so they can propagate the greatest lies. It's not based on any qualification. That person who does the most propaganda, everyone knows this. In any political race, who actually wins? It's that person who has the most money who can propagate the greatest lies throughout the country. They're all saying the same thing, basically. Even great politicians, they sometimes say one thing one place and another thing somewhere else. I don't know if you know about American history, but in American history there's a famous president called Abraham Lincoln. We just quoted him earlier. He had many famous quotes. So Abraham Lincoln, he's known as a very just president, but history has recently revealed what a rascal he was. Of course, they're all rascals. The difference is that some get caught and others don't. The only crime of political leaders who get caught, who get exposed, is the fact that they got caught. That's their only crime. Prabhupada said that about Nixon. Nixon was a big politician in America. He said his only crime, Prabhupada, is he got caught. They're all doing the same thing. It's like Kennedy. You've heard of the virtues of Kennedy? It was revealed recently. Kennedy was a real debauchee, just like all his brothers. He used to have parties in the White House. You know, the seat of all aristocracy in America is, you know, the White House, the symbol of strong leadership and purity. After the day was over, the Kennedys would close the windows and lock the doors, and they'd all have naked parties, dancing naked to music. This was recently, with all kinds of celebrities in Maryland and different people, I don't know, but they would come together, they'd have an orgy, just like a common base man, the president of America. The people are sleeping in their homes, feeling protected. But the President of America, he's dancing like some monkey naked with ladies in the White House. So Abraham Lincoln, he is said to have fought for the cause of the black man. Slavery, as you know, America, there was the slavery in the 1800s. So during this period, there was a great dissension amongst those in the South, or rather the North, that they wanted to abolish this slavery. Of course, there's always some political motive behind it. We don't know really what the real history. We only read what the historians write. We don't know the real history. But sometimes things are exposed. So apparently in the North, they wanted to abolish this slavery. It probably wasn't good for their economics. If it's good for their economics, a sinful person will do anything. There's nothing a saintly person will not do to help others, and there's nothing a sinful person will not do for his sense gratification. That is described in Krishna Book. There's nothing sinful, nothing so bad that a sinful person won't do for his sin. He'll even kill his own children, as we see in Kali Yuga. You cannot even take shelter of your own mother in the womb. Mother is meant to be our shelter. So even in Kali, you cannot take shelter. So nothing a materialistic person, nothing so sinful he won't do. So their policies are basically meant for the best way they can get sense gratification. And sometimes it appears that they're good men. So Abraham Lincoln, he took the side, being the president, he took the side of the North. And he said, yes, equal rights for all men, that is the basis of our Constitution. That is the basis of the American Constitution. So he supported that. He said we should abolish this slavery. But recently has been discovered some of his speeches in the South, the Confederate Union, who were against abolishing slavery. They wanted to keep the slaves. So it's been revealed recently that some of his speeches, when he went to the South to try to get the votes of the people there, he preached for slavery. In the North, he preached one thing. In the South, he preached another. In the North, he preached, abolish it. In the South, he preached for it. It's like in South Africa now. You know that they're trying to abolish this apartheid. But what is the only reason they're abolishing this apartheid? Because it's not economically to their advantage. And why is that? Any fool can know, any economist can know, that because of all the embargoes against South Africa, the country is drying up. The rand, the monetary value of the rand, is dropping day by day by day. So practically speaking, it means that it's either do or die. Either they do it against their actual desire, or they die, because they'll be cut off from the rest of the world. And the nature of this age is that everyone is so much dependent upon everyone else. There's no self-sufficiency. No one can be independent by living according to the laws of God. The demons cooperate in sense gratification. As soon as there's a little bit of discrepancy in the sense gratification, I will fight you to the death. See, what is the basis of their friendship? As long as we can both enjoy it, all right. But as soon as you get a little more than me, off with your head. It's very superficial materialistic relationships. So South Africa, people are thinking, oh, this Mr. de Klerk, he's such a great man because he wants to abolish this apartheid, Apartheid means that the segregation of the races, the exploitation of the blacks. He's a great man. What kind of great man is he? He's only thinking in terms of his and his own sense gratification, the collective sense gratification of his country. That's an extended form of sense gratification. That if they don't liberate the blacks, then no more money. So they're making a compromise, but they're appearing to be good men. It's all based on their sense gratification. So we're not very impressed. All these leaders, they appear to be great like that. But they're very calculating. Very calculating. Just like Chanaka Pandit said, never trust a flowing river, a beast with horns, a man with a weapon, a politician, or a woman. So never put your faith in a politician. I remember my father, when I was growing up, some of the maxims of my father. When my father was on his deathbed, with all due respect, when my father was on the deathbed, I said, Daddy, you're going to die. He said, I don't want to die. He said, you're going to die. I said, what would you like me to do in life? I said, "What? Give me one one wish which I can fulfill as your son. I wasn't a devotee. I was a dutiful son at the deathbed of my father. I was only 17. Very difficult experience. So I said, Dad, I said, what do you want me to do in life? He said, you say it and I'll make my whole life. He said, join the Marines and become a man. I said, Father, I'm a lover, not a fighter. I'm part of the peace movement. See, I had all the beads and everything. I'm part of the peace movement. He said, look me in the eye. I said, join the army. Fight for your country. And then, well, not right then, but a few hours later, it died. So I felt duty-bound. So we cannot put our faith in the instructions of materialistic persons. So he used to say different things to me. So one thing he said, never discuss politics or religion. I don't know, maybe you've heard the same thing. He said, never discuss politics or religion. Because you'll never agree with anyone. It will end up only in bitterness. So that's a fact. But now that we have met a great saintly person, His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada, we no longer have to argue. We know. You only have to argue over something when you don't know. If you know, there's no question of arguing. There's no need. You know. So now that we've understood what is real religion and what is Kaitava Dharma, what is cheating religion, then it's no question of arguing. We're always right. Sometimes you preach to people, but you're never wrong, they say. You're always right. You think you know everything? Yes, sir. Well, how do you think you know everything? Because we are following a pure devotee of the Lord, Srila Prabhupada. What can they say? So we're always right. As long as we're repeating the message, as we've heard from Srila Prabhupada, we're always right. We take great pride in this, that we're always right. We're never wrong. If we deviate, then we're wrong. But if we're repeating and following example, then we're right. So that's it. So now, but that is because only we have met a saintly person, a pure devotee. But where will you meet a real politician? You can't meet a real politician. They don't exist. Maharaj Yudhishthir, Maharaj Parikit, Dhruva Maharaj, Prahlad Maharaj, they were all great kings. They were pure devotees. They were real politicians. Prabhupada's definition of politics? Politeness. I heard it on a tape. He said the real definition of politics is polite. Polite means what? That the king is a servant of the people. He's polite. He's not committing violence to them. He's polite to them. He's engaging them in Krishna's service by performing yajna. In the beginning I sent forth generations of men and demigods and blessed them that by the performance of this sacrifice all desirable things will be bestowed upon you. All material and spiritual success can be achieved by the performance of sacrifice. And what is the sacrifice? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Krishna, Krishna Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Where politicians could learn this one thing, they would know how to actually fulfill the needs of the people. So, to be polite. It is not polite to someone to take them to hell. It's like you come to someone and you say, here, please, here's some diphtheria. Here's some AIDS. Here's some cancer. Right? Here's some. Sense gratification ultimately leads to hellish conditions, as we quoted the verse earlier, Prahlad Maharaj. It always does, always will. Sense gratification never changes. So they're engaging people in sense gratification. So they're not polite. So we cannot trust. Where you can find a real politician? You cannot find a real politicians, practically speaking, are always politicians. This verse is Prabhupada's condemning the modern politicians. But Chanakapana says, never trust a politician. Even 5,000 years ago, there were such politicians as mentioned in this verse, like King Vena. That's the reason Krishna had to come. One reason Krishna had to come. Because the world was overburdened by the unnecessary defense force who were posing themselves as the royal order. So many kings, exploiters of the people. Krishna had to come. Bhumi complained. Ah, they're too much. They're too much, all these kings. Because the king, his position, if he's not a devotee of the Lord, is to exploit the people. For instance, one trick of politicians is war. Politicians are supposed to stop war. We elect our politicians because we think they will keep peace. But they have no interest in keeping peace. really. They have no real interest. Because we see, generally speaking, there's always war going on. Because war is a good business. If the people in your land are complaining, then create a common enemy. That's one technique. You create a common enemy. And everyone gives up their differences, they come together, and they fight for one purpose. And war makes a lot of money. It's great business. You need tanks, you need missiles, you need guns, you need to begin so many factories, you need to begin there's a whole machinery needed for war. So it's great business, war. So they'll often do like that. The same principle can be dovetailed. A common enemy. Just like I was recently in touch with the devotees in America. And you know the Robin George case? You're familiar? Do you know the recent developments in that? Recent developments are that the Georges and ISKCON both had appeals to the Supreme Court. Not just us. They also had an appeal. Their appeal was they wanted their $32 million on brainwashing charges, which had been thrown out by the lower courts. So they appealed to the Supreme Court. Please, hear this case. These people are brainwashers. We want our $32 million. Supreme Court said, forget it. That was a couple days ago. And they also, what they did is they want more time to consider our case, which means they're actually thinking about it. Because there's a big paper which has circulated amongst the religious communities in America. And this paper has been presented in support of ISKCON to the Supreme Court. Before they hear the case, they're reading this paper. So it's very favorable towards us. So they said, okay, we want one more year to think about it. So we're safe for one more year, and it's a positive step forward. Bhagavan Narasimhadeva ki. But in speaking to the devotees, I have discovered that this is the best thing that ever happened to our movement. Well, you can't actually say like that. Everything's wonderful. It's one of the best things that ever happened to our movement, because it has united all the devotees. For various reasons, being Prabhupada said, neophyte devotees are very expert at fighting over the regulative principles, over the details. Neophyte devotees are very expert at fighting. So, somehow or other, because of our neophyte nature, you know, different temples were fighting and bickering over this and that, and, you know, devotees not able to maintain the principles, and they were leaving and becoming discouraged with this and that and the leadership, etc. So, the movement had become dispersed in the last 10 years to a greater or lesser degree. Of course, it's always there. But there was... devotees were dispersed, and there was no united front. United we stand, divided we fall. I don't know who said that, but somebody said that. I think Ulysses S. Grant said that. Remembering all these things from my American history class when I was 10 years old. United we stand, divided we fall. So, devotees were dispersed, and there was no preaching going on. So now one common enemy has come. This little girl, Robin George. Just see how expert Krishna is. Hasn't come in this big form of a big demon or that. It's come up to a little girl who joined the temple for a few years, became dissatisfied, joined an anti-cult movement, and sued the movement for more money than we could even imagine. And if the Georges are successful, our temples will go. Book distribution, whatever book distribution is going on, that will stop. Devotees will have no place. The deities will be put in a difficult situation. So many things. So devotees are rallying to the cause. What? Move Rukmini Dwarkadish? No way. See, I'll give up my sense gratification for the higher cause of Krishna consciousness. This is the real meaning of sacrifice. Sacrifice means that I give up my own personal consideration for the consideration of the Lord. Krishna tricks us. We perform some austerity, therefore, on his behalf, and we taste. Param drishna nivartante. Because the real bliss is to be found in preaching, in sankirtan, and devotional service, not in sense gratification. But we're foolish. Just like the ass, we can't see, we don't have the intelligence. Krishna creates a situation which motivates us, because we're devotees in our heart, that we're struggling. So he motivates us. All right, I'll take up the superior cause of devotional service. And then we're forced to taste. Because even if you don't want to, when you go out on sankirtan, you're blissful. Isn't it? You may not want to go out of the temple. It may be cold, you may be tired, you may have a headache, just like Prabhupada had a big migraine headache. He was going last night. Before the kirtan. I said, just take an aspirin, will you? I don't want to take chemicals. I don't want to take aspirin. He was born in Shantipur. Our Prabhupada was born in Shantipur. He has four arms. Show your other two arms. He can play two mardangas at one time. So he didn't want to take any of this chemical stuff. Only Ayurveda, if you have Ayurveda. But then, somehow or other, he came down to the kirtan, and he by beating the drum, he beat his headache away. And he completely forgot after the kirtan, saying, wow, he's like, whew, my headache's completely gone. So as soon as we engage in preaching work, then we forget all problems. It's like we had 3-hour kirtan last night. So for 3 hours, we completely forgot any problems of the material world. I'm sure there's some anxieties there in your minds. There's some things there lingering, but when the kirtan was there, we forgot all our problems. So the same, big kirtan means preaching. When we go out, we distribute books, we do Harinam, we work in the restaurant to give people prasadam. When we collect with paraphernalia to support our various activities, actually we're experiencing the highest taste. So Krishna makes these arrangements for us. So the Robin George case, what a wonderful thing. That now all the devotees have given up their animosity, their differences, their jealousy, their lethargy, their sense gratification. You'd be surprised who's coming out of the woods. Devotees are hearing from a long distance, oh, the movement is in a great crisis. We may lose everything. Please, we need help. So rallying to the cause, devotees are coming from deep, deep, deep in ignorance and passion, are waking up to the call of Krishna. Just like Krishna was in the forest and he played his transcendental flute. And the gopis, they're thinking, oh, Krishna is calling, let me give up everything. Actually, they had their responsibilities, they had their families, they had their babies. They were even breastfeeding their babies and the milk was boiling on the stove. And their husbands were there. Where are you going? I'm going to see Krishna. What? You can't do that? Yes, I can. Goodbye. You take care of the kid. Right? You just imagine. Whoosh, throw the kid in his lap. Bye-bye. I'm going to see Krishna. So when Krishna calls the devotee, what can he do? So that means devotee. Devotee means when Krishna calls, you answer. Krishna is calling every day, 7 times a day. I'm hungry. I'm so hungry. I want kichori and ladu and rice and dal. And afterwards, I want a nice chamara. I want incense. I want flour. So Krishna's calling you. And maybe you're thinking, oh, no, I can't do RT. Somebody else do RT. I'm too tired. But no, because we're devotee, Krishna's calling. So we have to go. So whenever Krishna calls, the devotee does not. That is the definition of devotee. Little hesitation may be there because of neophytes, but ultimately, when the calling is there, the devotee takes up the cause. That is the test. And the demon, just like Prabhupada said, there's demons in this movement. Of course, not here. Somewhere, I don't know. For some people, demon means selfish interest. So there are persons, just like Palambasura, he snuck in, didn't he? Was it Palambasura who snuck into with the cowherd boys? And he pretended, you know, to be part of the group, but Krishna knew. Oh. Balaram knew. They could tell. They could smell him. They can sense. Just like the temple president, the spiritual master, they can smell the material desire in their dependents. That is their qualification. Oh, yes. So stop that. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was once doing a kirtan at Srivas Sangam. Srivas Thakur invited one who would appear to be a great devotee. He was always chanting, and he was... So, but when he came into the kirtan, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we stopped the kirtan. He said, something's wrong. There's someone here who is not actually chanting Hare Krishna without motivation. There's something, I feel very uncomfortable. He said, that person there, not you, I'm just using it as an example. Although you were sleeping in the beginning of the class, but we'll let you off. So that person, he said, out! So when that person was revealed, he gave up all the narthas immediately. Ah, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then whatever material desire was in his heart, it flew away just like the birds. And Mahaprabhu said, all right, let him back in. So when Krishna calls, a devotee does not hesitate. And that is meaning of devotee. So when we're called by the order of Guru, you do this. Because how do we know what Krishna wants? Because Guru says. So Guru says that's Krishna's calling. Yes, sir, I will do it. No hesitation. Maybe there's a little hesitation, but our ultimate motivation, yes, because Guru is saying, Krishna is calling, I will do it. And it is always meant for our betterment, because the Lord and His devotees will never engage us in any activity which will be the cause of our downfall. To the contrary, our authorities will always engage us for activities which are meant for our upliftment. So we never hesitate to receive any instruction, whatever that instruction is, even if it's a great challenge, then we accept it wholeheartedly, because we know the greater the challenge, the greater advancement we can make in Krishna consciousness. Devotees don't like to be idle. They like a challenge. It was a challenge in the beginning to chant 16 rounds. What a challenge it was to follow these four regulative principles. I don't know if you remember. What a challenge it was. But we took up that challenge, we made advancement. Prabhupada was constantly challenging us. In fact, he said he left us with a challenge, an eternal challenge. He said book distribution must double every year. So a disciple cannot actually leave his body before he can execute the instructions of his guru. He's thinking like that. Look at the impossible challenge that Prabhupada. Go to the West, preach to everyone in the English-speaking land. How can one man preach to the whole English world? How is it possible? One man. And Prabhupada was not an ordinary man. He was a Vaikuntha man. So Prabhupada actually preached, though he's still preaching to the whole world. So he took that. So the challenge is always there. The challenge means that we have to go deep into Krishna consciousness to get the spiritual strength that is necessary to accomplish the instruction of our Guru Parampara. We cannot do it otherwise. Preaching is the essence, books are the basis, utility is the principle, and purity is the force. So there's nothing a devotee is never discouraged, because he knows, for what reason do I have to be discouraged? I've got the strength there in the instructions of my spiritual master. Balarama, Krishna's Lord Balarama, he is the source of spiritual strength. So the spiritual master is the representative of Balarama. So the spiritual master is present in the form of his instructions. So whatever is necessary to be done, actually what does Prabhupada want? He wants that, you know, our Prabhudatta Desh, that place where we are preaching, that place should become Krishna conscious. A devotee is not satisfied until he sees everyone is a devotee. Thakur Bhaktivinoda revealed his ecstasy when saying, now I am very happy. The whole 14 worlds are chanting Hare Krishna. My bliss knows no bounds. The entire 14 worlds are chanting Hare Krishna. Then a devotee can sit back and say, all right, Hare Krishna, I'm going to Vrindavan. We're not going to retire to Vrindavan when we're old people. We want to die with our boots on. You know that term? In America we have the cavalry. So the cavalry used to fight the Indians. So the most glorious thing for a cavalryman was to die with his boots on. To die in bed, surrounded by one's family members at home. You know, everyone lament. That's not a glorious death for a soldier. The most glorious death for a soldier is to die on the battlefield. So practically speaking, we see Srila Prabhupada's determination to leave his body preaching. Actually, until the last moment, he was that last purport in Srimad Bhagavatam, a few hours before Prabhupada left. What is another older person doing? Lamenting for years before he dies. And just a few days before that, or a month or two before that, Prabhupada was so sick, but he was determined, let me go to the West to preach again. He said, I must go to inspire my disciples. So in that sick condition, that is so glorious, Prabhupada, he went to London. And if you've seen pictures of Prabhupada in London, we don't like to look at these pictures, but if we look with knowledge, we can get inspiration. Prabhupada's hands were so swollen, he could not close his fists. He had to be carried in a palanquin from his room down to the temple room. He could hardly speak. He had His Holiness Tamal Krishna Maharaj speak. He said, I cannot speak. He said, you speak. So Tamal Krishna Maharaj just glorified Prabhupada. And there Prabhupada was sitting in. So this was Prabhupada's mood, his preaching mood. That up to the last minute, he went all the way across the other side of the world to preach in such a sick condition. This is Vaishnava, devotee of the Lord. So, similarly, we have been given great challenges by Śrīla Prabhupāda, and we cannot be idle until those things are active. It may take many births, but what is the law? What is the harm? Can you imagine anything greater than being born in the Christ Church temple? So we need grihastras. Because we need brahmacharis. It's all right. Just disregard that last statement. We'll leave it up to the rest of the men. It's mostly saffron here. Even if we have to take birth after birth, can you imagine? What greater thing could you imagine than being born back in ISKCON? What greater desire does a devotee have than to be born back into this? ISKCON means ISKCON all over the universe. Ebayash Bhukshu Tribhuvana. Prabhupada's glories are being chanted all over the three worlds. So this movement is not only present on this earth, but Prabhupada informed us that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is also on the other planets. So just like traveling Sankirtan, we leave the temple to go to Auckland to collect. You don't do that, do you? Anyway, you've got your own island. So you go here and there. So devotee is not adverse to do it. Whatever. And then he will only be satisfied, peaceful, when the instructions of the spiritual master are satisfied. That is a devotee. Well, that is the duty of the leaders, to engage us. Prabhupada said to someone, he said, you're a good leader, he said, because you know how to engage the men. You know how to engage them according to their propensity in Krishna consciousness. Therefore, you're a good leader. So what is real leader? The greatest leader is that person who can take the greatest amount of men from darkness to light, from ignorance to truth, from maya to Krishna consciousness. That is the definition of a leader. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, you all become guru, he said. Everyone. Someone may be thinking, I'm not a teacher, I'm not a guru, I'm not a parent, I'm not a king. So I don't have any response. Yes, you have a responsibility. Just walk outside, see all your brothers and sisters. You know, immersed in the ocean of maya, the repetition of birth and death. That is your responsibility. Everyone has a responsibility. When you join Krishna consciousness, you understand what is real responsibility. Real responsibility means, first of all, I become Krishna conscious, and then my responsibility increases by making others Krishna conscious. That was the duty of the king. Ultimate duty of the king was to ensure that people became Krishna conscious. And that materially and spiritually. Now even materially they're not taking care of the people. What to speak of spiritually? Now materially they're not even taking care of the people. But in the Vedic age, the king was responsible. If a son died before his father, the king took it personally. There's that story in the Krishna book, isn't there, where the Brahmana complains to Arjuna. He said, You are one king of this land. He said this, my son has died. He's died before me. So if things are being done properly, everything has its everything will happen in due course of time. Everything is set up by the Om Puna Mataha Puna. So everything has its due course, and materially and spiritually. So if the king is enacting the laws of God, everything will happen in proper due course of time, not untimely. Just like there was an automobile accident. And Prabhupada wrote to the devotees, this is very unfortunate, he said. This untimely death of one of our members of our movement. The devotees said, well, maybe it was, you know, Krishna's plan. Prabhupada said, no. He said it was due to careless and reckless driving that this devotee had to leave his body. He said, this person who was driving the car, he is responsible. So he was irresponsible, and it was an untimely death. So everything has its due time to take place. So because the king was so expert at enacting Sanatana Dharma under the auspice of the Varnashram Dharma system, a son would not die before his father. The king was, you're doing something wrong, they said to the king. Something you're doing wrong has caused my son to leave his body. You are not enacting the laws of God properly. Therefore, my son has died early. Now just see the great weight that the burden the king had to carry. So the kings were always performing yajna. We see in the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. They're performing these big agnihotras and so with tons of grain, This is how the taxes were used. They taxed the people, but the tax was used for sacrifice. So people didn't complain. It was like an investment. You give some money to the government, it's like an investment. You give maybe 10%, you get back so much more. You get nice roads, you get trees planted on the side of the road, you get wells, you get a strong kshatriya force which fights against irreligion. There's so many benefits you get collectively. But nowadays they tax, and then they use the same tax against the people. I was reading recently then in India, you may not know this, but in India, do you know what how much percentage of a person's wages the government takes? Take a guess. In India, the government takes 97% of a person's wage. Just recently it's changed. 97%. It's down to 50 now, but even 50 is not right. How you can inspire anyone to work if they're taking 97% of your wages? But how do they use that money? For defense. Not really for defense. They make missiles and arms and so to fight, to appease the people, like we were. Not really for defense. They make missiles and arms and so to fight, to appease the people, like we were explaining before. Family planning. They have these family planning units and so forth. It's all bogus, the way they use the money. So, what to speak of spiritually? Materially, they're not even providing for the people. And the government is involved in all types of illicit activity. Maharaj Parikit, he went out to tour his land, and he was seeing, oh, there's this sudra dressed up as the royal order. He's beating a cow. And personally, he drew his sword ready to behead the man. And this was 5,000 years ago. Even one cow, he found one cow which was being, the king went out of his office and found one cow which was being mistreated, ready to fight the culprit. Nowadays, the politicians, they're passing so many laws supporting this cow slaughter. I don't know if I said it here one time, but Rava said Indira Gandhi, she did more damage to India than the British government that ruled there for 100 or 200 years, the Mohammedans, and anything else that has entered into India, the railroads, the factories. She said she did more damage than others because she was inimical towards the Brahmins and the cows. At least that was there in Vedic culture. The Brahmins and the cows were, even today, the Brahmins and cows are given due respect. Namo Brahmanya Devaya Go Brahmanya Hitaya Cha Dagatitaya Krishnaya Govindaya Namo Namaha. These two things are very dear to the Brahmins because they uphold religion, and the cows because they're just nice to look at. If your mind is agitated, just go look at a cow. So peaceful. We get milk and butter and everything, so forth and so on. So, she disrespected the Brahmins. That's a whole story. I won't tell it now, how she did it. Well, I'll tell you briefly. She wanted to decrease the population, and it wasn't working with birth control and so forth, so they wanted to perform this vasectomy, whatever it is. They sterilized the men. So she made a quota. I want this many millions of men sterilized in India to stop the birth rate. So then it was discovered that they couldn't find enough men because the businessmen would always bribe. You don't have to do this with me. I want to have a big family. Here's 1,000 rupees. So they couldn't do it amongst the people whom they actually may have wanted to have done it. So what they did, they went to the sadhus, to the Brahmins. They went to all the holy places and they performed this operation on all the sadhus. They went to Radhakund and different places. So you can imagine what an offense this is. To vilify a great saintly person in this way. So millions of sadhus were made like this because of Indira Gandhi. And the cows, she actually legalized cow slaughter in some states of India. Is it in Bengal they allow cow slaughter? Some states of India, they allow cow slaughter. Not only that, but you know, it's just such hypocrisy because all the other states who, you know, there's a lot of Muslims who want to eat this way. So, you know, they import their meat from these other states. So now on a mass scale it's going on. So she introduced, actually, Kali Yuga in a grand scale. Kali Yuga means especially these two elements of society are abused. They should be protected. Government means to protect the innocent. The women, the children, the old people, the cows and the Brahmins, under no circumstances should they ever be abused. They must always be protected.
That is a government's first duty, to protect the weak. Kshatriya. Kshatriya, probably the definition. Kshatriya means to protect from hurt. So who to protect from hurt? Nowadays when they engage in war, they kill all the innocent civilians. In the old days, the war would be on the battlefield. And the women and the children, they would go watch the battle. Funny twist, but... You know, they would go and they would sit on the sidelines and they'd watch, and then they'd see who was the victorious, and then they'd have to surrender. That is the way it was. But nowadays, when there's war, what does the government do? They annihilate the cities. They avoid the armies and the cities. They just annihilate the cities. Just see what rogues they are. They're meant to protect the innocent, but they go right to the innocent and they kill them. And if they're not killing them with war, they're killing them with so much sense gratification. The government knows that liquor and that cigarette smoking is dangerous for your health, but they tax it. They take a tax, they take a cut themselves. They know these things are bad. They know that the consumers are eating and drinking so many bad foods and bad chemicals. They know this is all going on, but they support it. They allow it to go on. In one sense, it's going on very blatantly, and people complain. But in another sense, the government is polluting the atmosphere, polluting the rivers, raping the earth. And the people are taking it as, you know, like Coca-Cola. They should stop production of Coca-Cola. Some devotees would complain. I met a devotee the other day. He just blurted out a Freudian slip. He said, "Guy," he said, "yeah. You things are so expensive, you can't even buy a Coke anymore." Coca-Cola. Do you know what Coca-Cola does to you? Just take a penny and put it in Coca-Cola overnight. The acid in that Coca-Cola will make it bright, clean, real nice and shiny. Imagine what that acid does to your stomach. Right. It's so dangerous to drink. But, you know, they're allowing it to go on because it means big bucks. Means big money. So their only motivation is to exploit the people. They get to the top because the most deceivious, most biggest rascals, they go to the top. And when they get to the top, they just exploit the people to the max. Therefore, it's described in Bhagavatam. As Kali Yuga goes on, people will be so frustrated with the government leaders, they'll just go to the forest to get away from it. Now, they're thinking in Eastern Europe, you know, there's hope. But don't be deluded by this. Oh, the communists are gone. Now the democracy will reign. Prabhupada said, "Demon crazy." You put a bunch of fools together, just like we mentioned earlier. All the animals, they got together. They elected a donkey. What can a donkey do? So sutras don't have the power like that. They should not have that power. So now, you know, the communism is gone, and now it's going to be democracy. Everyone's waiting. How wonderful it's going to be. Peace will reign on earth, goodwill to man. Peace on earth, goodwill to man. And, you know, somehow or other, it's all... But it's just out of the frying pan, into the fire. You go to the democratic states, and you see how degraded they are. What does democracy mean? Everyone gets to enjoy sense gratification to the best he can. You go to America now, which is, you know, the birthland of democracy. You see how degraded it is. It's so degraded. It is like Rome before it fell. Rome was so powerful, but just before, you know, Nehru fiddled away, Rome was the seat of debauchery. We won't even mention what was going on there. The whole Roman culture became so degraded. Homosexuality was rampant. And people were drinking, and they had their vomitoriums, and we don't even mention what was going on. And it was very easy for the Huns to come and conquer. The great Roman Empire, which spread, you know, from Rome to Scotland, and even into Asia Minor, such a powerful country, they became rotten to the core because of sense gratification. And it just some hill tribes came in from... Macedonia. Just some hill tribes. Just some tribal people living in the hills with clubs and spears. And they took Rome and burned it to the ground. So this democracy simply allows. People have to be brought under control by strong leadership.
Strong leadership means no sense gratification, Krishna consciousness. When we see there's strong leadership, then we see that we can follow, that we give up sense gratification. So the leaders are all degraded and fallen. So real leadership is necessary. So where that leadership will come, it's going to come from us, from the Hare Krishna movement. So we need real leaders. So our definition of a leader is one who's Krishna conscious. Because a devotee can practically do different types of services. He can wash pots, or he can be a temple president. But the most important quality is his purity. Purity is the main thing. So people do not have faith in the leaders anymore. They don't have faith anymore. Therefore, no one's following. It's becoming an anarchy all over the world. So they need real leadership to whom they can turn to. So that leadership will have to come in the form of this Krishna conscious movement. And they will not have faith in those they can't trust. So we have to show real leadership. And therefore we have to develop love for God. Just like the Brahmins. The Brahmins were very simple, very poor. Like that, they lived in little simple dwellings, but the people worshipped them. Why? Because of their purity. That is why the Brahmins were worshipped. Their knowledge and their purity. They had nothing external to show. They only had sattva sadabhushana, saintly qualities. Because people know that if someone is impure, he will exploit. And if someone is pure, then he'll be after my real interest. So all of us have responsibility. Therefore, we have to become pure, and then the people will follow. The people, they'll test. Just like when they can't put their faith in something they can't trust. So nowadays, like I had to buy some medicine recently. So I went to buy some medicine, and on the top it said, do not open this bottle of medicine if the seal has been broken. So I was looking up any seal. I wouldn't put my faith if I saw the seal was broken. So in the same way, people will not put their faith in something they cannot trust, and so therefore purity. So how will we take over the world? With great machinery and great armies and weapons, and you know, should we create our own kshatriya department like in the old days? You know, in New York, we used to have our kshatriyas, and they'd practice, you know, during Bhagavatam classes. You'd hear them upstairs, you know. The Brahmins were having class downstairs, and the kshatriyas, they were doing their duty upstairs. You'd hear, you know, we thought this was all right, you know. The Brahmins, we were having class. And the kshatriyas were fighting upstairs. And the sudras were sleeping in their sleeping bags. Prabhupada said, if you're sleeping in Bhagavatam class, sudra, better go work in the fields. Work with the cow. So how Prabhupada said, this movement, this international society for Krishna consciousness will save the world in its darkest hour. So it appears that, you know, the lull before the storm. Now there's apparent peace throughout the world, etc. But do not think that the world will not have to face up to the great sinful activities they are performing. 60 million children killed by abortion every year. The cows, the Brahmins being exploited by the leaders. That's why Krishna came. Krishna came because these things, so that something's going to happen. We don't want to quote Nostradamus or anybody like that, but we don't put too much emphasis on astrology. But if you did, then you would know that, you know, when Saturn goes into Uranus or whatever it is in 19 whatever, we don't want to get one of those doomsday classes, you know. But anyway, that's the history repeats itself. We're not naive. They planted the seeds, and they'll have to pick the fruit. Not that, you know, there's no change. Karma is there. Eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. So much sinful. Prabhupada said World War II, World War I, they were the result of cow slaughter. He said it right in class. Shocked many people. Cow slaughter was the cause. If you slaughter the animals on the back, you will be slaughtered on the battlefield. So it will come. But this movement is this movement. You know, with our skinny little brahmacharis, you know, and, you know,
our little temples and, you know, our Matajis. We're going to save the world. So what, should we start a defense unit? You know, should we start importing arms, M16 rifles and grenade launchers, and get some of our intelligent devotees, you know, Sadaputa and Rasa Raj from Bombay, and, you know, instead of spending all this time defeating philosophy of the scientists who could care less anyway, let them start finding out how to make an atom bomb. You know, if they're going to really do something, we got to save the world, let's get our nuclear defense unit ready. You know, start building bomb shelters and building up our forces, you know, practicing with weapons every morning. Then it really, the government would really get in our case. But no. Because ultimately it was the Brahmins who were in control, as we'll see from this chapter. King Vena was very powerful, but by Brahmin Tejas he was defeated. He was such a powerful king. He was so powerful that the rogues were afraid. Now that's a good king. When the rogues hide in fear of the king, that means the king's pretty powerful. Problem is, when the rogues become the king, then all the other rogues, they get very fat and happy. But they were afraid of King Vena because he was such a powerful king, such a powerful kshatriya. But what was more powerful than all his might and muscle was Brahmin Tejas. Because they simply went, they killed him. So the Brahmins, by their tejas, by their power, they killed the king and did so many things. They actually brought law and order, and ultimately they gave birth to King Prithu, the supreme person, Shaktavasya Avatar, supreme personality of Godhead. And with the appearance of Maharaj Prithu, everything was put right. So, what is our duty in this International Society for Krishna Consciousness? To become pure, to invoke the presence of God. Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama. We won't do it, little old you and me, but if we can become pure and through our purity preach the Krishna Conscious Movement, that preaching, through that preaching will manifest Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So who will save this world at the darkest moment? Who always comes at the last minute? Krishna. Krishna always comes. That the Srimad Bhagavatam is full of the history of how the Lord appears. He appears for three reasons. To annihilate the demons. To inspire his devotees and establish Dharma. So he will appear through the medium of this international society. So don't worry. You don't have to like carry a 38 revolver in your beanbag. You just instead of pumping out bullets, you start pumping out the rounds. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. It's like this, right? It's like they've got a gun, right? So that's the same principle. You just, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna, Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. The whole atmosphere of Kali Yuga is contaminated by sense gratification. As a result, sinful reaction. And the whole atmosphere of Kali Yuga, we can change the ether, we can change these sinful reactions, and these desires are lingering in the ether. Ether is the substance where these things stay. So, if we chant, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, 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 Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, we can push back the tide of Kali Yuga. We can change the ether. We can actually change people's hearts. And we can actually change the world. So how do we do that? Because we invoke Krishna. Krishna Varantusha Krishnam Shangopanga Shaparshadam Yagnai Sankirtan Payar Yajantihi Sumedasa. The Lord appears in this. He always appears to establish Dharma. So he will appear in the form of this Krishna Consciousness Movement. But we have to chant and perform devotional service in such a way that Krishna can come. Because Krishna doesn't like to go to filthy places. The altar is meant to be spotlessly clean. Then Krishna will come. And Krishna will also be in your heart if your heart is clean. So Krishna will appear in this movement at that time when it's needed. And we have to make sure that purity is the force which inspires the Lord to come and save the world. So if you want to change your heart,
and you want to change the whole world, you're doing it every day when you sit down and you pick up your bead bag and you start chanting, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. And chanting the holy name, also serving the holy name. Actually, everything in this movement is service to the holy name. The holy name is the sum and substance of this Krishna conscious movement. It is the very foundation of this international society for Krishna. The most important thing, our priority, is pure chanting. We should not think, as it's stated, that chanting Hare Krishna is one of the ritualistic activities mentioned in the Vedas as Karma Kanda. There may be many activities that we're doing. It's all devotional service, but the sum and substance is chanting. So the priority is when you sit down every morning and you begin to chant, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. Our service is actually an expansion of our chanting. Whatever we can accomplish, or whatever we're unable to accomplish, is as a result of pure or impure chanting. So we must make a supreme effort every time we sit. It will save us, and it will ultimately save the world. So that is our most important business. Our most important business is chanting. It's like a kshatriya. He has to train before he goes to battle. So what is our practice? What is our discipline? Every time we chant, we try to improve the quality, freed from the 10 offenses, etc. And then, hopefully, when that darkest hour comes, we can have one big, big kirtan. We don't know how it will happen, but it will happen. So be there to see. Make sure you're there. That when this wonderful prediction by Srila Prabhupada happens, that you're there to witness it. We want to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu appear like that. Every day we're experiencing, we go on Sankirtan, we feel the presence of the Lord. So imagine, at that time, when at the darkest hour, the most, people cannot imagine how hellish it's going to be. At that moment, Krishna descends, somehow or other. Let us see how it will happen. And let us help to invoke the Lord's presence by chanting, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Shri Chaitanya Gaura Chandra ki jai. Shri Krishna Sankirtan Yajna ki jai. Grantara Shriman Bhagavatam ki jai. The chanting of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra ki jai. So are there any questions? Commentaries? Yes?
If a devotee dies,
anytime,
is anyone
in close to himself? That depends. Of course, death may come at any moment. We have to be prepared. Of course, no one is ever thinking he's ready to die, is it? We may say, Prabhupada said that, to actually teach us a lesson. That we should not be reckless or careless in the execution of our devotional service, especially driving. I don't know how the drivers are here, but in Australia, they're horrible. And actually, it's ultimately not funny. When I was at New Mayapur as president, I identified 5 devotee bodies, all as a result of careless driving, falling asleep at the wheel or driving too fast. So I hired one movie, went to America, and there was one movie which they show the police officers to get them to be able to see an accident. They were seeing an accident, it's a very horrible thing. So they show this video just to get the officers strong, you know. The videos of different car crashes and things like that. So I asked the head police officer, can I have this video? He said, you can't watch this video. He said, you'll just become sick to your stomach. So this is for to toughen up our officers who are on the roads. So I said, please, and I explained the situation. So I said, all right, don't tell anybody, you can copy it. So anyone in our temple who had a traffic violation, speeding especially, or even a parking violation, I made him watch that movie. They always took a bucket into the room. But our accident rate decreased by, I think, 87%. Of the accident stopped because devotees saw it in real life. So was untimely, but it was careless and reckless. But on a higher understanding, what is a timely death? Okay, all right, let the Grim Reaper come. I'm ready now. Okay, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Ram Hare. All right, come on, right now, Ram Ram Hare. Does it ever happen like that? Perhaps the most, you know, fortunate death could, you know, if you put you in front of a firing squad, you know, okay, you know, at the count of 10, you know, load your rifles. Ready? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Made it. But how often does it happen like that? I don't think it hardly ever happens like that. Death is always, as far as we're concerned, coming at an inopportune moment. We have so many plans. Yes, but just wait, I had this plan. And, you know, wait a minute, I'm not completely Krishna conscious. I wasted 4 years doing this. And I didn't finish my 16 rounds today. You know, so be prepared. Because be prepared means at any moment, right now, 5 minutes, 10 minutes, it'll always be, wait a minute, I never thought. I said, we have one devotee, his name's Gopaswami Das in France, and he works in a hospital. He's being trained, he's becoming a doctor, actually. So he works in the emergency ward. And so many cases come in every day, and that's his training. He works on these people who come in with emergency wounds. So he said, you know, Maharaj, he said, the most amazing thing is that practically everyone says the same thing. I never thought this would happen to me. I never thought this would happen to me. So don't become guilty, like Maharaj Yudhishthira said. Everyone is going to the kingdom of death, but I'm not thinking that I will go. We will also go. I will go, you will go. Everyone in this room will be gone. In 100 years, what is now, it is 1990. So let us say in the year 2400, not one person in this room will be here. So how will you leave? Now is the training period. Just like in school, you have your tests, right? You have the examination before the big examination. What do they call that? We call it a pre-examination. So you have so many little tests. You know, and you can flunk them, it's no big thing, right? But the big test, watch out. You can't flunk that one. So every day there's a test, right? Maya's testing us every day. Krishna or Maya?
Maya.
I mean Krishna. Wait a minute. Let me think. Okay, Krishna. He who hesitates is lost. You may not have the moment. You know, the car is coming ahead on, you know. So, Krishna or Maya? Oh, I have so many desires, you know. You may take birth as a devotee again, of course, but again in the womb, and again childhood, and infant, you know, it's all that to go through all that. So now is our most our opportune moments. It's the golden time. We're all young. We're all between, I don't know, 17 and 41. Just hit 41 today. God, that's really old. Wait a minute, I'm getting closer to Krishna. Well, somewhere between, we got anybody older than that? How old are you?
42.
I don't feel so bad anymore. But this is a golden age. It's the golden age within the golden age, right? This is Kali Yuga, but it's the golden age of Kali Yuga. It's the best of all times. The demigods are lining up to take birth in this movement. Kali Yuga is the best age for making spiritual advancement. And of that time, because you can chant Hare Krishna, of that time, this golden era, which started with the appearance of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, 10,000 years, and Prabhupada was just with us a few moments ago. The movement's strong, and we're young. And our mind and intelligence are keen, our senses are strong. Don't waste it in sense gratitude. Don't be fooled. Use every ounce of your body, mind, and words in the service of the Lord, and take full advantage when you're strong. And just like King Kulashekar is saying, you know, when my mind can think of the Lord, he said, I would rather die in this situation. So we have to take advantage, full advantage of this golden time, this golden opportunity. It is right now. And prepare ourselves. Be prepared. Just like in we have the scouts, the Boy Scouts. Do you have Boy Scouts in New Zealand? So the Boy Scouts motto, I think, all over the world is be prepared. When you go out to the forest or something, you take your camping knife, you got your Swiss Army knife, you got your canteen, you know. I can't remember what we had. We had a little shovel and, every boy remembers, you know, his compass and his knife. You know, these big, huge, you know, 15-inch knives, you know. Like, we're just going in the park, you know, as if some big tiger's going to attack or something. And we've got our compass, you know. We're right in the downtown park, you know, the city. Okay, so I got my compass, and I got my knife, and I got my water. And my mom packed me a big lunch, you know. And, you know, I've got my map, and if anything happens... Boy Scouts. We should be like the Boy Scouts. We should think no place is secure. Oh, I'm more secure here than there. Padam padam yatvidi, padam padam yatvipadam natesham. There's danger at every step. Actually, they say that most accidents happen within 10 miles of the home. And most accidents happen to babies in other people's houses. I just learned that from one devotee. That most baby accidents, you know, babies get burned or something like that, that usually happens in the house of a babysitter or a guest, not in your own home, because you're more careful in your own home. They're in other people's house, it's not their kids, so they're not so careful. So sometimes accidents happen. But accidents happen. 10 miles from the home, most major automobile accidents happen 10 miles from the home. So don't think that, you know, you're safe in home. That it's more dangerous someplace else. It's dangerous from Brahmalok down to Patalalok. This is the material world. And these bodies are very fragile. And danger can befall us at any moment. So therefore, how imperative it is that we're always Krishna conscious, that we're always remembered. This is all training for that moment. And it's not that you're going to be handed a piece of paper. Dear such and such, we would like to inform you that you have 7 days to live. You will be dying, not like Maharaj Parikshit. Maharaj Parikshit knew he had 7 days to live. We don't know if we have 7 minutes or 7 seconds. So untimely? In one sense we can say we'll always be untimely because we may never feel ourselves, you know, to that point. So we have to depend upon Krishna. And how always? How to be prepared? Just make sure you're always engaged in service. Always be engaged in what type of service? Intense devotional service. Because that service which offers the greatest challenge, that service, we're most dependent upon Krishna. So the devotee is eager for some challenge. He's eager for some, what is my next step forward in Krishna consciousness? I've made it this far, but I'm not satisfied. What is my next step forward in Krishna? Please give me some service. Give me some challenge. What is my next step forward? And if you don't have any service, then what is your challenge? Read all of Prabhupada's books. That's also a challenge, isn't it? To make sure, can you imagine leaving this body not having read all of Prabhupada's books? So there's challenges. We have our personal challenges. Give up all your anarthas. We don't have an idle moment. How can we sit peacefully? There's some cancerous growth of desire for fruitive activity in our hearts. Some speculation remains. And so we don't have time. Therefore, you'll always see a devotee is very intense in everything he does. Even the slightest thing, the devotee is very intense. Like I was playing with the kids yesterday, with Radha and Kamala, and they were just like, I was thinking, I was playing with them. I said, these kids don't stop. So I said to Radha, what did I say? Are you always like that? She said, yes, when I'm around you. So they wouldn't stop talking, they wouldn't stop moving. So I was thinking, this is how I'd like to be as a devotee. Always something. And because they're kids and they're innocent like that, then everything's Krishna. They were laughing about Krishna, joking about Krishna, becoming angry about something in Krishna. Give me that, that's my paper, that's my drawing of Krishna, that's my drawing, no. They're making a joke. There was something about Lord Ramachandra. What was that, Radha? We were talking about Lord Ramachandra yesterday. And Hanuman. Remember that story? There was something, and it was really funny. Everybody was really laughing. So what it is, if it's hard work or it's leisure, whatever, it's still as intense for the devotee. And if that intensity is there, then death can come. All right, let it come. Hare Krishna. That was Krishna's statement to Arjuna. He was saying, good time to leave, when the sun is in this position, bad time to leave, when the sun is in that position. Darkness, light, this season, that season. You know, you can see Arjuna must have been getting a little bit nervous. How am I going to arrange all this? So Krishna said, but he said, that's not for you, Arjuna. That's for those yogis, you know. They have to, like, you know, get everything right, and then, boom, they go out of the Brahmaranda, you know, fly off. But a devotee is not, he said to Arjuna, he said, for you, don't worry about this. He said, you just always be engaged in devotional service. So what type of devotional service? Pure devotional service. Prabhupada's definition of an uttama adhikari. There's different definitions. There's kanishta, there's madhyam, and there's uttama. So what is one definition of Prabhupada of an uttama adhikari? One who's very strictly following the rules and regulations and is trying to the best of his ability to spread the Sankirtan movement all over the world. That is a pure devotee. So don't think you can't go back to Godhead in this lifetime. Prabhupada's Guru Maharaj, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, I read it. He said, I see no reason that all my disciples cannot go back to Godhead in this lifetime. I see no reason why they can't go back. All my disciples cannot go back. So each and every one of us has that opportunity. We can become pure devotees by taking everything to heart. Our sadhana and our service. If we take it to heart. We may be this, we may be that. That's all right. But if our prominent desire, intense desire, is to serve Krishna, that's an uttama adhikari. If that's the prominent, there may be other desires, but if that desire's up, when your time's up, that's what they see. I think I told a story here of that man who was chanting, who was a demon his whole life. He was on his deathbed. And he said, okay, I'll chant now. What the heck? Got a few more minutes, might as well try it. So he sent his servant to the marketplace. You go to Loy Bazaar and give me some Japa beads. So his servant went, and while the servant was gone, he died. He never even chanted Hare Krishna. The Yamadutas and the Vishnudutas both came. Hey, the Yamadutas said, what are you guys doing here again? We already went through this with Ajamil. What are you doing here? I mean, at least Ajamil, he chanted Narayana. This guy didn't even chant the holy name. Didn't chant anything. He was just a demon his whole life. So what did the Vishnudutas say? Yes, but he desired to chant Hare Krishna. As they say, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. Not how you start, it's how you finish. So let us finish. Let the finishing moment, whenever it comes, let us be intensely engaged in service. And if there's a little gap there, then you put your hand in your bead bag. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Or if you're taking prasadam, you know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. Whatever it is, do it with as much devotion and desire to please as you can. And that will ensure that we can go back to Godhead. Because Jayananda made it. Jayananda was a very nice devotee. And he made it. Prabhupada said, there's every chance that you have gone to the heavenly planets to enjoy a celestial life for thousands of years like the demigods. He said, from there, you can promote yourself to the spiritual world. So what is the loss? Even if you don't make it, you go to the heavenly planets, and from there, there's sadhus, there's Vaishnavas, there's devotees, you can get together. You know, somehow the arrangement will be made by the Lord for your progress in devotional service. But Prabhupada said, because you were hearing the chanting of the Hare Krishna mantra, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, at the moment of death, he said, there is every chance that you have gone back to Godhead. So there was a chance they didn't make it, which meant that perhaps there was something in the heart, because Prabhupada said, you know, Prabhupada, you've gone to the heavenly planets. Said, but because the prominent desire at that moment was to hear the holy name, that was taken into account. Krishna has taken away that diseased body and has given you a body which is just suitable for your devotional service. So if those desires are there in the heart, just keep them down. They'll become purified. Don't be discouraged. Make the prominent desire to serve Guru and Gauranga. That we have to make prominent. So it's getting a little late. 9 o'clock, so we'll finish there. Today we have our Sunday program. What time does it start? 5:30? So let's make sure we get the guests in the kirtan. You do that here? Forget. Remember last time here we had a 6-minute lecture and a 4-hour kirtan. That was the last Sunday feast I was here. So we'll try to speak a little bit more to convince their dull brains. But make sure that everybody chants and dances in the kirtan and then prasadam. Gatara Shrimad Bhagavatam Ki Shri Prabhupada Ki Gaur Premanandi.